Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program is broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugalpul peoples, the Yugambeh, Malanjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. My guest today, Jeff Clark, joining me by telephone. Jeff, how are you?
How are you, my brother? Good.
I'm very well. Tell us your mob, your country.
Chaperong people down in Western Victoria were the custodians of the Southern Cross story. You know, a lot of people don't appreciate that the Southern Cross image on the Australian flag is actually got a big Aboriginal cultural story behind it. And that's down in our country, as it probably would be in other interpretations around the country. But that's where we identify ourselves. You know, we look up in the sky and we see the Southern Cross. We know you look at the two pointers and they're pointing south. We just got to follow them when we get home, bros.
All right.
That's if there's no clouds in the sky.
Can you tell us your interpretation, your mob's interpretation of the Southern Cross?
You got the top star is Drawk, the mother frog, and Drawk, the mother frog, sort of, you know, she drank up all the water at one point, and then she sort of then, you know, regurgitated it, and then she formed the place like the Hopkins River Basin and the Mount Emu Creek, and they call it Mount Emu Creek, because we've got also the story of the emu. If you look at the Southern Cross, you'll see a big black patch to the left of it, and if you look in a really clear night, you'll see that it's in the shape of an emu. You've got the head of the emu, and then you've got the body. And you've got the Bunya the possum, and the possum had this adventure where the Bram Bram Bruck brothers actually chased the possum, who was sort of a bit of a mischievous sort of a fellow, chased him up a tree, and they turned, an Aboriginal fellow, they turned him into a possum. It's one other story. Then you've got the Bram Bram Bruck brothers, who were speared the big giant emu, Tringle, which was the emu, and he turned into the male and female emu. And then if you look at the feather of the emu, you will see that it's got two prongs. And it's one of the only, or very few, or the only bird in the world where the feather has actually got two prongs. And that depicts how, you know, Wah the crow actually flew into the cliff face and split it and chased the emu and up in, he laid the egg. So, you know, it's quite a long and extensive story. But Wah the crow sits off to the side. So, you know, you've got these Bram Bram Bruck brothers, you've got the Drawk the frog, you've got Bunya the possum, and you've got the two pointers as the two spears. So it's a very good story. And as I said earlier, Tyke, you know, it's good to see all these white fellas who are walking around with a tattooed on their arm and their neck and not knowing that they're supporting, if some of them would probably faint or die if they knew that they were depicting an Aboriginal story.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So all right. Quite unique, I think.
For sure. Mate, election's coming up on Saturday. Maybe some reflections back over the past and what we might hope for the future.
We did the about 30 of us, a group of 30 of us, just recently, Tyke, done a documentary on 88. You remember the convoy and in doing the taping for that, they asked what was significance of 88 and you know, why did everybody go to Sydney to march, and the message sticks that were brought down, the seven message sticks. And I'm not sure whether you were one, you received one from New South at the time or not, but I certainly, along with others, got one message stick on behalf of Victoria. But before I sort of discussed those matters, it went back a little bit further. You know, it was national land rights in 83 and the preferred model. And I think you were the heading up the New South Wales Land Council at the time, weren't you?
87, I was, yeah, 87, 88.
Yeah, 87, 88, that's what I thought so. But, you know, it went back to, I think it was 82, and, you know, my recollections sort of reflect back to, you know, J.B. Alfred Peterson, he was trying to change the Doggets or getting rid of our mob on the communities up there or closing them down. And
well, he still had the Act, you know, the Act that controlled us, all our mob on those communities. He still had that in, and one of our favourite slogans or one of the big catch cries or calls of the day was smash the Act.
That's right. And remember, we marched and we all gathered there at Musgrove Park and, we had the rally over at the Roma Forum, and you had all the police underneath, and they stopped us walking up the ramp and marching, so we had to single file. The only way we could actually carry out the march was to sort of single file march around. And, you know, if anybody wearing Aboriginal T-shirts or any designs, etc., you know, like Black Power or just the Aboriginal flag, you know,
yeah,
you were locked up.
Yep, all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, all that, you know, land rights stuff, so... you know, and we've become a little bit more active then, you know, and people convoyed from all around the country. So then there was sort of the 85 in Parliament House.
At Canberra, that was the protest against the National Preferred Land Rights Model.
That's right, brother. Yeah. You've got a very good memory. We all gathered there at the old embassy site and we stormed the Parliament. The Parliament was still sitting and, you know, we occupied that for about 3 or 4 hours, you know, chanting and making speeches, and there's some good photos around of that. But, you know, Bob Hawke and them, they were all petrified, terrified. There was only one sort of blue line, if you like, one layer of sort of federal police lining the doors, and, you know, Rob Riley and other people, I think it was Shorty O'Neill and that, you know, we all tried to jump in on them and drag them off the steps and... And you had all the old mob come down from the Central Australia, you know, they had their boomerangs and they had their spears and, you know, they were very, very strong in wanting to take action, you know what I mean? It was World War II for them. That gained momentum. And then it came to, of course, other actions. Then it came to the 88 March. You know, we all convoyed again to Sydney, and you know, you guys in the New South Wales Land Council, and certainly the coalition of Aboriginal organisations, the Federation, Land Councils. It was the NAC, I think, at the time, headed up by Riley and Melzer and a few of them. So, you know, there was an 80-odd thousand march, you know, and that's the first time that we invited the migrants into our march, and the churches and the unions, and, you know, it was a very powerful imagery. And, you know, there's still, I'm sure, lots of footage. I think this doco is going to be replayed or made for January 26th next year. So hopefully that will sort of trigger, you know, in the minds of some people, What the struggle was about. You know, it was about land rights. It was about asserting our rights.
Self-determination.
You know, we were sitting in self-determination. We were sitting in the dust, Tiger, as you remembered, Bazo's farm and Alice Springs.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like sleeping bags. There was no joy there, you know, eating, chewing on tough kangaroo and damper and, you know, the old brownies, you know, where they'd mix the treacle and the raisins into the damper in the old... camp oven, and you know, they were very good, strong days. And when you reflect back and see, you know, the people who are sitting around those places, like Johnny R. Kitts and you know, the Mansells and the Dodsons and different people, O'Shanes, etc., the Coes, you know, when you sit back and reflect out, sort of these, a lot of these people have gone on, you know, Johnny R. Kitts went on to become the chief minister in the territory. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, you'd never dream that the Aboriginal people would control the vote in the territory elections. You know, Aboriginal people didn't realise their power as a collective, as a group. And look what's being achieved today, even though it's probably can be improved. But, You know, as I say, it's a transitional thing. You know, people, Aboriginal people, need to understand their power. And you, it gets back to that question you asked. You know, we've got an election coming. You've got lots of candidates standing for different parties for different reasons. But I seen that debate with Stan Grant on Awakening there on on NITV the other week, and I was pretty impressed with some of the positions that, you know, these Aboriginal people were putting. Even though they stood for different candidacy of different parties, if the common thread was, you know, us as a people, we need to be strong, we need to govern, we need to get in control of the politics. So it's not, you know, the ideal outcome in terms of some people's eyes. You know, myself and Mansell, we're now resurrecting the Aboriginal provisional government. You know, where we need to take control of our affairs. Self-determination can only be expressed at the highest level by Aboriginal people around this country coming together. But, and one of the things that I was very much aware of is that we should be careful of our criticism. And, you know, I've got plenty of criticism of plenty of people and plenty of events, but we must be careful about how we criticise. We must continue to try to encourage. And as I say, it's a transitional. The Territory situation is probably not the best situation, but, Jesus, you know, 25 years, 30 years down the track, it's an enormous achievement. It's an enormous achievement that, you know, the people in the Cape, you know, you've got the only bloke in Australia, only major or semblance of a major party, Bob Katter, saying first thing he'll do, he'll get rid of the intervention. Now, the only bloke got courage. He got courage because he's got a relationship with Aboriginal people in the Cape, you know. So they're the positives, and I think we need to look at that. On the downside, without sort of, you know, it's disappointing to see that the Congress hasn't made many political statements and hasn't had much of an effect in this election. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's just a reflection of, you know, how we're compromised by taking the resources of the government. Therefore, we need to, you know, maybe we need to be talking about a black tax. We've got to be able to fund this. We can't, on the one hand, criticise government and then ask on the other hand an handout for us to be able to govern ourselves. You know what I mean? We need free and independent resources to be able to put together a body of people who can, you know, act in the national interest of Aboriginal people. And that means going overseas. Have a look at our actions over the last, you know, couple of decades internationally. You know, you yourself and others, we've all went to the UN. We've got the Declaration on Indigenous Peoples' Rights, and we were critical. Australia wasn't a part of the Security Council back then, because Australia couldn't be appointed to any international significant organisations like the UN because of their record, their criminal record in Australia against Aboriginal people. And, you know, now, because they've controlled, you know, and those who are maybe representing are somewhat compromised, the fact is that now they're getting status internationally. So, you know what I mean? They've been successful to a point, breaking down our international attack on them. Now, you know, some may argue different to that, but, you know, we need to step that up. I see that, you know, the Fijian government now has a Pacific Forum which includes communities and private industry. So there's possibly a seat at that table where, as you know, we tried in the early days to, you know, go to the Pacific forums and were locked out of the process because it was only sovereign governments. Well, we're sovereign. We're a sovereign people. All we need is to start to act as a government, resource ourselves, and, you know, start to become more active internationally and nationally.
Yes. And
I thought I'd better pause for a breath there, but I'm sort of rolling a bit there.
Yeah, no, it's good that to reflect back to the 80s and the strength of our movement and some of those improvements, some of those changes, even though we've got a long way to go, some of those changes. And there certainly is a lot of a number of First Nations candidates putting their hand up for the Conservatives, National Parties, everybody, all the different parties, and even some of the the independents, the smaller mob, like WikiLeaks and the Greens and different ones, you know. So it's good to see the First Nations political party standing
candidate. It looks like that. It looks as if Tony Abbott's, you know, is going to win the election. You never know. There's anything can happen in election day. But when you look at what his policies are, you know, in effect, he's announced the kitchen cabinet again. You know, he tried that. You know, that was a policy, you know, 15 years ago. Charlie Perkins, remember, was going to head up the kitchen cabinet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his announcement that he's going to be headed up by Mundine.
Warren Mundine, yeah.
Yeah, Warren Mundine is no different to that announcement. When you look at the COAG sites that they've announced, the 8 COAG sites, they're going to put $5 million. You know, that was an idea that ADSIC had and initiated and funded initially, you know, to bring communities together with an holistic approach to how they're funded in governance. So, you know, there's nothing new about what they're saying. And in some ways, I suppose, there's nothing new in what the Aboriginal people are saying. You know, we've still got the same ideals. And, you know, things don't change much. There's small variations. So, you know, and I think, and one of the questions of the interview on the ABC, Docker said, well, what about the youth? You know, is the youth still on side or still interested? You know, they become middle class, etc. Well, you know, and I think, and in the past, we've tended to say, you know, they've sold out or they've lost their drive or commitment. Well, when you know, trying to fund a mortgage and feed your kids and educate your kids, it's not necessarily that our people have fallen by the wayside. We need a different way how to engage those Aboriginal people working in the public services, etc., or, you know, in the mining industry, etc. And maybe it's, you know, particularly now with the new multimedia stuff and, you know, all that flash stuff you got up there in your place, you know, you can get the message out pretty quickly. People can respond, react. You know, maybe it's not hitting the streets at this point, but look what's happening around the world. You know, if you use the example of multimedia and watch what's going on, you know, in Egypt and these places, people are, you know, coming out in the millions.
That's right.
Into the street. We don't have those numbers, of course, but, you know, used correctly, I think, you know, the informed discussion, you know, the stuff we talk about the UN, the informed debate with our mob, we've got to start talking it up. And I think in October we're coming up to your place, me and Mansell and a few others, and we're going to be putting out, you know, something on YouTube. So, you know, they're the new medium. And maybe you're not going to get the people in the streets for a start, but we've got to get them excited again, you know. And I'm sure that the young people will want to contribute. And maybe they contribute by just sitting at home and saying, all right, I'll put some of my resources, you know, I'll chuck $5 in a week or a month or something, so that others who can travel will travel and get out there and start to, you know, explain some of the implications of, you know, whether it's voting or lack of mediation in Aboriginal communities. I think the other big impact, I think, that's come along, Tigers, is native title, you know, and the amount of conflict that it's created amongst our mob. In some ways, native title could be a process where we start to define our territories, define our people, start to develop laws that governs our people, if you like. How do we implement those laws? How do we, how do we act as a collective anymore? You know, even as in a social manner, you know, there's so many distractions. You know, what's Aboriginal about our organisation or our Aboriginal community these days, when we've got so much conflict raised by, you know, all this sort of, proving who belongs to country and, you know, who's traditional owner and who's historical and the PBCs and how you sit there and how do you interact and, you know, government wanting you to develop the Iluwas and wanting you to, extinguish your title on your land, and some people are getting more than others, or so they. How do we have a fair system of governance amongst ourselves? You know what I mean? These things are not going to happen, and they're not going to come down the chain of command from government or from kitchen cabinet or whatever, you know, maybe even that is a derogatory term, I don't know. But, you know, how do we govern ourselves and control our own destiny, Tiger? Like, at the end of the day, you know, it's up for Aboriginal people to create the standards, create the forums for mediation, create a fair system amongst ourselves. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, greed creates a lot of division in itself. And it's a universal problem. It's not just specific to Aboriginal people. So we've got many challenges ahead of us as of what we did in the past. But we showed in the past by coming together, by being the one, we've always talked about one mob. We don't necessarily have to have, there can be different territories and different governance arrangements for different people. I know Michael Anderson's doing something with these people, and that's encouraging. It's encouraging to look in the territory and see what Alison Anderson is doing with her people, even though some would disagree with that, but at least they're voting in block and they have power. So we need to realise our power by our actions, and we need to be coordinated. And I think we've lost that capacity of late to be able to sit around and have the yarn. One of the things we did in Sydney was we just had a dinner. We had Solly Blair, we had Big Smiley Johnson, Naomi, Jenny Mundo, a few others. We sat around and had a dinner and just reflected on this stuff, and we started to talk about strategies. And, maybe that needs to happen right around the country. It's something that we're sort of, it certainly reinvigorated us old fellas. We felt young again for a day. maybe that's one way to do it.
Yeah, no, well, there's one thing for sure. We will see governments come and go, as we have done. But we do need to look back at the 70s, the 80s, and try and work out, well, how do we get our mob together again? How do we get the communication happening? How do we get people becoming aware of issues so we can set our own agendas and prioritise what it is we need to be doing? We do need to be doing that right across the board, and that probably starts in each individual community, I suppose, Jeff. What are your thoughts?
That's right. That's right. I think you're right. I think sometimes you look beyond the horizon for the answer when, in fact, the solution sitting in front of your lap, mate. It's staring you in the face. And I think sometimes, on reflection, you have to, we're not without our division in my own community at the moment. You know what I mean? We're going through a terrible time, but we're, with some government interference, and there is always going to be an interfering factor, whether it's a mining company interfering in your lives, or it's a government or the department of some description, So that's where we need to look, and we've always talked about Aboriginal governance, How do we? Well, self-determination. If that very word begins with self. And, what are you going to do yourself about some of this stuff? And, sometimes you need to put down the spear. And, I know it's difficult. There's some long and agitated sort of, situations out there where people haven't spoken. I haven't spoken to some of my mob for the last 3 or 4 years, because it's such a division. So, at some point we've got to heal some of those divisions to at least some ways towards healing those situations. And I think that needs to happen right around the country. It's never going to be a perfect situation, Todd, but we've got to think back to our Aboriginalness. What are we? Who are we? What are we? Where do we want to be? It's a bit like the old chant, what do we want? Yeah. Land rights, Well, it's got to be a little bit more sophisticated now. All right, we get land. How do we share the benefits? How do we, how do we act towards our neighbour? Getting these disputes, native title, some of the resources coming in. Are we going to have a future fund for some of these people, or are we just going to burn it up in resources in the native title unit? So much compliance is being pushed on these poor young people who are working in these organisations. It's all about weeds and seeds. It's not necessarily about the big ticket items like, the economics, etc. But maybe, that's what me and Mance will have in the chat there in Sydney, maybe it's got to be a bigger aspirations, We might have to go offshore to the Pacific Rim and start talking, let's face it, the people in East Timor, they're poor buggers are raising chooks and pig farmers and vegetable growers and fishermen, So it's not, you don't have to be a sophisticated nation to become a nation of people. PNG, There's still subsistence. You look at the Solomons, Fiji, people living subsistence lifestyles, yet they are nations of people. Now, they've got different situations to us, of course, but, but with that comes the responsibility of feeding the family. and being fair to your neighbour and being cohesive amongst yourselves. So, you know, there's many challenges, Tides, and, when you sit back on the mission here and you sort of reflect on some of these things, you wish you had another chance in some ways, you know, and certainly I've made mistakes myself, as we all have, but, we still believe in, black Australia. We still believe that Aboriginal people can do a lot better than what we've done over the last couple of decades, and I think there is hope on the horizons, and, we mustn't abandon those people who we may have some sort of angst with because of some silly reason, silly little reason about a few dollars or they got the house or they've loaned the bus or whatever it is,
Yeah, right, yeah.
Get on the bus, cuz. Yeah. Come with us sort of thing,
Jeff, the Aboriginal Provisional Government, when was it established and why?
At Tranby, we had a press conference, and you asked me the year, it was certainly in the mid-80s. We thought, we've always talked about governance and we've acted, and particularly, it was in the coming together on a number of national occasions like the Commonwealth Games, things at the at 85 at the steps of Parliament House, 88. Then we had, 92 or whatever it was, the native title, the stuff. And so, all these things coming together regularly, talking amongst ourselves and always talking about, we are a nation of people and we're self-determination and we needed to go internationally to, to start acting as a government, acting as a people's, the design of the flag, people realise that, we are a people's and, the attack on our identity, half castes and, the yellow fellas and not real, et cetera, et cetera. So, all these things sort of, brought people's thinking together and that thinking was, I suppose, came together under the Aboriginal Provisional Government. We couldn't be a government as such, but we needed to start turning our minds to, positive image of acting nationally and acting as a government would act and to bring that about. So, and I think Bobby Weatherall and Michael Mansell certainly went to the Pacific Forum I was talking about. And they, said they were representing the Aboriginal Provisional Government. They showed the flag. We took the flag to the UN and, we certainly had tourists of Europe. I think a lot of the remains, Mansell and Weatherall were very much involved in the remains, getting back the Aboriginal remains. So that had an impact across the globe. The Soviet Union was back then, London and Germany and those places. So America, the Smithsonian. We started to act, as ambassadors, if you like. We developed the Aboriginal passport and we travelled on that, got denied entry in Darwin there, me and Josie Crawshaw at one stage. I had to jump through the fence and jump over and, blokes were chasing me, firing shots, and it sort of pulled me up a little bit. I was quick back those days, bros, but I wasn't quick enough to be dodging all. I could dodge one bullet, but I didn't know about the next one, so I pulled up pretty quickly. We started acting, and it had a real effect. It had a real effect, and we talked about the one people. And when you think about it, governments now, even now, are affected by that language, and they're trying to change our language, Indigenous Australians, who are they? Who are Indigenous Australians? Aboriginal peoples, and from your background at the UN stuff, Tyke, peoples with an S, implies that you are a people, you've never ceded sovereignty, even the Native Title Act goes back to the situation where, Aboriginal people are sovereign people. They are nations of people, but we haven't acted it out, we haven't consented, we haven't given our informed consent. That's what, when you think about, and I'm digressing a little bit here to the constitutional debate that's going on, you can't, peoples can't have a treaty with themselves. So if we're not different and distinct, you're the same. And that's what Indigenous Australians imply, that we are the same. We're just another Australian, other Australians, and we Indigenous means that we were first. You know, Pauline Hanson calls herself Indigenous. You know what I mean? So we've got to be careful with our language, number one. So in saying that, the Aboriginal Provisional Government gives that, you know, very distinct and resonates that very distinct message. That is, we are a people, a nation of people who've never ceded our rights. We have a right to self-determination, and how that looks is going to be determined by ourselves. Now, one of the confusions is that people say, yeah, well, if you're the Aboriginal government, you know, why is it you support somebody standing for, you know, the territory government or candidate here and there? Well, as I say, there's got to be a transitional stuff. We've got to learn to be able to govern in their places. And if we're brave enough, and unfortunately we don't have large numbers, and it's not all, you know, we don't have the power to just secede. Like, for instance, you know, Cape York could very well become, if you had the numbers in Cape York, I don't know what the numbers, how they stack up there, but, you know, if you had some arrangement with Bob Catter, maybe Cape York could become another state. You know, you only need 50% of it's allowed in the Constitution as we speak, or Eastern Arnhem Land, which is mainly Aboriginal people. You know what I mean? Once you become a state, you could have 12 senators in the parliament. So, you know, this idea that the Australian government appoints or nominates a captain's pick, and, you know, not being negative in any way, shape or form towards Nova Peris, who's a great friend of mine, at least Aboriginal people would have a choice about who they put in the parliament. Now, that would be a transition. In my mind, these things would be transitional because, you know, we need to learn the upper echelons of how this governance work and, you know, this diplomatic relationships with international countries, etc. You know, we need to train up a number of our people. It just can't be us old war horses who are going out there, you know, using the same tricks of the passport, etc. We've got to have a little bit more discussion and debate, Tides. And one of those things are, you know, defining our territories. And as I can see, some of the benefits from native title, defining our territory, defining our people, how do you deal with other people? In fact, you know, we need to have a policy on immigration. Yeah, maybe this is, we have an open policy on immigration. We encourage debates, provided people have got skills, provided they're prepared to transfer those skills. Aboriginal people should embrace some of these people coming up, because at the end of the day, they've been coming for 200 years.
That's right.
And they've stayed outside of our community.
Yeah.
They've treated us differently. They've treated as if they've owned the country. So, you know what I mean? So maybe we've got to, you know, we just retreat and we come up with policy on immigration, you know, and we invite people in and we invite them to transfer their skills and live in our community and learn about Aboriginal way of life, learn about the, you know, the relationship we have with the land and respect those sorts of things. We'll make better citizens of them. You know, it'll be better than the first lot that came.
That's right.
So, you know, those sorts of little improvements, those are the sorts of things we need to discuss and have debates about around the country, you know. How would we then sort of run our own institutions? How would they look differently, you know? Like in the Territory, for instance, you've got now, rather than Aboriginal community, and I think it may be in Queensland, the Doggetts, you know, their shire councils. Well, how are they different to the White Shire Council? Who, you know, are running around picking up your dogs and, you know, picking up your rubbish and whatever. How are they any different, you know? It could be that, you know, and I'm going up to Cairns on the weekend, you know, we've got to be creative. Cairns, Yarrabah, you know, got potential for a deep water port. Why aren't we looking at, you know, as the Aboriginal nation, putting in that sort of infrastructure so that, you know, rather than 80% unemployment on Yarrabah, you've got an infrastructure that sort of can cater to the region. You know, you could have a deep water port, bringing in the tourist ships, bringing in the container loaders, taking, you know, the iron ore, the coal out of that port, and employing, you know, those 80% of unemployed Aboriginal people, plus associated businesses, all on Aboriginal land. You know what I mean? Therefore, there's your start to have your first sort of taste of real economic power, you know what I mean? So we've got to think outside the square a little bit. We've got to think big. We're not talking about, you know, CDP. One thing that the APG doesn't have, Tig, we don't have a Centrelink. So whoever joins up with the APG is going to find it a little bit tough because there's no Centrelink. We don't have that welfare system that we can come out and promise people that, you know, go and cut the lawn and we'll subsidise your wage. It has to be a system whereby everyone's employed, everybody's got to be functioning together, everyone's got to be, you know, not only designing their institutions and governance models, but creating it and carrying it out. There comes the responsibility, you know. And really, why would you want to be different? And why would you want to be supporting things like the APG? Because you get the commitment and loyalty that you don't get to a white system of imposition. You know what I mean? We don't want to be running around punishing people for drinking too much. What we want is people to take responsibility for controlling the drinking and controlling the activities associated with drinking, you know. So that's the sort of talk. We need to have a mental approach to how we bring about change rather than just have slogans of, you know, we're sovereign, etc. We've got to talk about the intensity of how we bring about that and how it will improve our lives. Otherwise, you know, we're pissing in the wind.
Yeah.
And then we certainly don't plan to do that. We want to bring about constructive criticism, constructive ideas about how we govern ourselves and what are the benefits for our people. You know, apart from that, it's an idea that's been there for 20 years. It's been effective, but I think it needs revamping and rethinking.
Well, there's no question about the need for change, Jeff. There's been tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, I suppose, spent in the Aboriginal Affairs arena over the last 40 years and longer. And there hasn't been too many. I don't think there's been enough outcomes. I don't think there's enough value for money. There's no bang for the buck. And there does need to be change. There's no question about that. And there's got to be some sort of radical
money,
change.
Money is what we certainly need resources, Tiger, on one hand, but money is not everything. We need to bring about internal change amongst ourselves, you know, that self again, determination, that self. How do we bring about change and how do we support our mobs, you know, to sort of, you know, pick themselves up and sort of, and, you know, let's, if you do a broad brush of around the country, you know, you look at the intervention in territory and the criticism of the Aboriginal communities, you know, 70% of the black fellows in the territory don't drink.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of myths out there.
There certainly is.
So, you know, we need to help people overcome that perception, you know, and we've all faced a lot of those, you know, differing perceptions and negativities, et cetera, and vilification from, you know, white institutions and other people. So, you know, it's a question of, I think, one of the strengths of our associations, Tig, was sitting around talking, you know. Mm. We need to yarn it up a little bit more. You know, it's good that you've got these programs and radio stations and YouTubes and Facebook and or Hatebook or Spacebook or whatever you want to call it. The fact is that, you know, there's no substitute for the eye-to-eye stuff, you know, and that's the traditional way, you know. Sit down and eyeball somebody and actually, you know, feel your way through the conversation and, you know, add that interreaction, you know. And that's some of that stuff, I think, is starting to be gone missing, you know what I mean? We don't have that interreaction. We don't sit down around the table or around the room and, you know, we don't have that association. It's not as strong as what we'd like, I think, and to talk about the big ideas, you know what I mean? You've got to have a dream, I suppose, you know, and you know, you've got to have hope for the future. And, you know, we can't let go of those institutions or those systems that, you know, we've developed over thousands of years, you know what I mean? They're in our genetics. They're there. And all they need is to be, you know, we need to remind ourselves about the strength of and the benefits of our traditions and lifestyle, you know, and bring it back on. I think it's not impossible. And I think, you know, one of the greatest joys. You know yourself. You walk into a room full of black fellas, whether you're enemies or not, you know you're in black land, you know. Mm. And what a great feeling it is, you know what I mean? Just to be able to give, you know, the mate a hug or the auntie a kiss on the cheek and, you know, even in a room full of black strangers, you know what I mean? You know you're home when you walk in the room, you know, and that's one of the greatest things that I had when I was chairman of ADSIC was to be able to go around and be accepted by the mob. You know, every time you'd walk into a room, like, you knew there was some energy, you know. We've got to recreate that energy, you know. And if it's under the banner of the APG or something else, well, yeah, so be it.
The younger ones of today, you've referred to the old war horses like ourselves, the younger ones. What's your feeling of the younger ones? The energy's there, the interest is there, they're looking for something different, something positive.
Well, I know just my own family, like, you know, you could be classed as middle class. You know, they're doing extremely well, you know, they're making very good money. And I talk to them, I say, you know, would you come to a march or whatever? You know, they would. They're busy, they're raising families, and I'm sure this, you know, can apply right across the country. And you know, they're passionate, you know. You sit around the lounge room table with them and they're extremely passionate, and you know, they'll bring their kids and their family lot to an Aboriginal event, like a football game or a basketball carnival or a knockout or something like that. So you know what I mean? We need to work out ways of how they can contribute more by not necessarily being present every day. You know, we all can't, as I said earlier, we all can't be sort of sitting on that one bus and sort of, you know, getting out there into town hall type stuff. And, you know, we need a way in which we contribute. And maybe that's, you know, by their own social medium, you know, that they have, you know, they develop some sort of a cultural approach to how they engage with one another on the social media, you know. You see a lot of negative black fellas, they become experts at sort of, you know, using his Facebook to sort of cut each other down, like, you know, there's some nasty stuff there, Tiger, and let's not pretend there isn't, you know. And it's only petty stuff. I know in Mobia, I watch some of their Facebook sites, you know, they're having their blue on
out in public,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And public, you know, like, just changing that and modifying that sort of stuff and be disciplined, you know, about some of this, you know. We're the same mob, you know what I mean? We don't need that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, they're the sorts of things that we may want to talk to people about controlling and being, you know, being a society, a community. And that's, you know, we talk the big ticket stuff, but it's the small stuff, you know. We've got to crunch the small stuff too. And, you know, and then it might sort of come to how you might want to contribute. You know, you might just then say, all right, you know, it's like the Fakatsi days. Every Easter we'll go and do something in our own neighbourhood, but we'll do it together, you know, or maybe rather than we'll have a dinner once a month in our own communities, and somebody, you know, it's like the old Sunday roast, you'd remember that, and most people out there listening, you know.
Yeah.
What happened to the Sunday roast, you know? We've got this McDonald's culture now, you know, fast drive-in, drive-out stuff, you know what I mean? You know, throw the box out the window, you know what I mean? Like, it's destroying us, our food culture. Look and think of our food culture. Our food culture, we change that back to some of the ways in which we sat around and, you know, had the old soup and the roast lamb. And
we'd be a lot healthier
go
too.
Out there and knock off a sheep, for God's sake, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We'd be a lot healthier too, mate. We'd be a lot healthier.
Yeah, a lot healthier, you know.
That's
so,
right.
You know, lots of subtle changes can be brought about. So, you know, maybe they're the sorts of discussion. And it'd be interesting to get out there and travel around, and this is what me and Mansell are thinking about doing, you know. He's stopped work now, I'm not working, so and we talked to Josie Crawshaw and a few of the girls from Darwin the other week. They're keen for us to get up there. I know we're coming up there to Brisbane. We've been to Sydney, but we'll go back. You know, we'd just like to get back and put a little bit back in and maybe raise the awareness, you know, because, you know, you've got to think back, you know. Some of these kids weren't born when we were doing this stuff, Todd, you know.
That's right, yes.
So, you know, we can't blame them for being complacent and don't know, because, you know, we don't have the schools of thought and the discussions going around necessarily, because governments have cut those resources. Well, let's not fret over that. Let's get onto it, you know. Jump back in the saddle, you know, and get out there and start riding hard again, I reckon. I
certainly do need to. Mate, it's almost news time. I appreciate you joining me today and looking forward to see you.
All right, my brother. You stay strong and, have a good day. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
You have a good one, Jeff. Thanks very much, mate.
Good on you, brother. See you.
Jeff Clark, former chairperson of ATSIC, joining me today. Yes, have a good day. Join me tomorrow for Let's Talk.